and welcome to the InSource Podcast. My name is Tracy Melissa Wheaton, and I'll be your host today. I'm here with Wendy Heike. She's the Director of Special Services for Wawasee Community School Corporation. She has a bachelor's degree in special education from Indiana University. She's taught students with learning and emotional disabilities in South Bend, Indiana, before pursuing her master's in educational administration at Boston College. Wendy also obtained her EDS and school superintendency from Indiana State University. She's currently president-elect for ICASE. In her leisure time, Wendy volunteers for An Orphan Smiles, enjoys reading, traveling, and spending time with her family and pets. Wendy and her husband, Kevin, adopted their two daughters from the Ukraine. At the time of their adoption, the girls were 8 and 13, and the oldest daughter had special needs. Wendy and Kevin both had a background in education, particularly special education, so they were fortunate to have the knowledge of how to access resources to help their daughters have a smooth adjustment to becoming part of a family and to being educated in the United States. Their experiences with advocating for their daughters' services are what prompted Wendy to become vocal with other parents, service providers, educators, and the community. Throughout many of the obstacles they faced, Wendy and Kevin realized that the majority of people who have a child with special needs do not have the knowledge, the resources, or the understanding of how to navigate the various systems that they were dealing with, from education to legal to medical. As parents, they were well equipped with the knowledge from several education degrees and years of teaching students, but they still struggled in learning the logistics of how services actually get implemented. After their oldest daughter moved on to adulthood, Wendy and Kevin decided to share the tips of information that they've learned along their journey in hopes that other families would have a smoother route. Additionally, their youngest daughter, who did not have a disability, had valuable information to share with families, as she wanted parents to make sure they didn't forget about their other children in the family. It is Wendy's ultimate hope that this advice can help families live a happier, healthier, and more balanced life. And again, Wendy, thank you so much for sharing your experiences with us and the parents today who follow our podcast. I'm very excited to have you here.
Thank you for this opportunity. It's such a privilege to be speaking with you.
So, where should families obtain information on how to help their child when they initially find out that their child has a disability?
Well, there are a couple of different ways. Of course, if your child is born with special needs, you would get information from the doctor and the medical community. And that can be very overwhelming because there is tons of information that you're dealing with on top of dealing with the situation that, you know, you thought your child would be born and not have any significant needs, and now you're overwhelmed with all of this information. And so the medical route would be the first place if you're born with a child or you have a child that's born with special needs. First Steps is the agency in the state of Indiana that provides services to families for children with special needs from ages birth to three, and so, or up until their third birthday. And so that would be the place they would also get information. If your child is age three and beyond, you can contact your local public school system. We have a child find requirement that we need to make sure we evaluate and identify any children with special needs, and that could be as mild as having a speech impairment or as significant as having, a significant learning disability, cognitive disability, that type of thing. So primarily the medical community, First Steps, and then your public school system.
Excellent, Wendy. Thanks. You know, my own son went through the First Steps program. He was identified as actually having some hearing issues that had been caused by inner ear infections, and as a result had some speech deficits, and we had no clue. And First Steps evaluated him, helped us sort all that out, got a surgery planned, and followed up with everything, and then provided us with a speech therapist for almost a year, I think, after that surgery took place. So I can't tell you how enormously helpful they were for us. And I'm glad that you bring this up, because I think a lot of parents just aren't aware that that service is out there. So,
right. And I think the important thing is to not assume anything. We assume that the medical community or the doctors are communicating with First Steps and vice versa, but that may not always happen. So it's good to look at both sources to get the information.
Mm-hmm, definitely. And I learned early on, keep a notebook of all the contacts and yeah. all the contacts that you make and the phone numbers and everyone that you call and follow up. It's very important.
Yes.
You know, there's an abundance of information out there on the internet. I mean, as someone who's pretty constantly posting resources on Facebook for the folks that follow our page, you know, lots of stuff coming in. It's really hard for me to kind of filter what stuff parents really need to know and what stuff really isn't that critical. There's so much out there. How do parents know what sources are reputable, what sources they need, what sources are the best?
You know, the internet was designed to be a great tool for communication, but there is so much information, as you say, it can be overwhelming. And you could be on the internet 24/7 trying to find information on how to help your child. And so part of that process is being very careful to make sure that information is accurate. InSource, obviously, is our state organization that helps parents kind of tease out what is the valuable information, what's the information that might lead you down another path. We have our federal law for kids with disabilities in the country, but the states can each decide how to meet the requirements of that law in a different way. So you might be communicating with a parent from Michigan about the legal systems in that state, and Indiana might have a different interpretation of how that law gets interpreted. So make sure you talk with your state organization, InSource. The Department of Education is also a good organization. And then look at whatever the area is for your child. If it's mental health, you can look at the National Institute for Mental Health, autism, the Autism Society of America. Every different disability area, has a national organization for the most part, where you can get information. You know it's research-based, you know it's valuable and informative, because, you know, every parent has a different situation, and you can be overwhelmed, like I said, with all the information, and making sure you talk with someone so you're spending your time getting good, solid, valuable information instead of information that's going to lead you off onto a rabbit trail. You're going to look for all sorts of things to help fix your child. And some of those things are going to be helpful and some of them aren't.
Right.
And so that's why you want to make sure that you seek out those research-based agencies.
Yeah, and I was just, it just occurred to me as you were speaking, probably anything that ends in .org is probably a safe bet, or .gov.
Yes.
More than likely. I know when you Google something like autism, for example, you'll get, you know, a few credible websites, and then the next thing you know, you're going, as you said, down the rabbit trail of blogs, and
right.
you get a lot of people's valuable personal perspectives. But again, that stuff is very, very subjective. Where I think we want to try and steer folks in the early stages to get that evidence-based, that research-based information that generally is available at those .gov, .org sites. And even those sites will have links to further reputable sites, so that can be helpful too.
Right, because every situation is unique.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And if you start looking at different blogs and chat rooms, you might be dealing with some people that have different agendas. You know, mm-hmm. keep in mind that people want to try and make money off of helping kids with disabilities, and sometimes they have ulterior motives in that sense. So
right, exactly. It's very good to be mindful about those things.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what do parents need to do to prepare for meetings, whether it's at the doctor or at the school system or with a case manager, or any of these services that they get linked up with? How should parents best prepare? I know I talked about keeping like a notebook or a binder with all my resources, you know, in one place.
You know, ever since I was a little girl, my dad would ask me, would say, why do you have so many questions? And I said, because I want to know the answers. And now I know why I'm in this field, because I always have lots of questions. And so keep a notebook on your child, and as you have questions, write those down. Whatever the question is, even if it seems like a crazy question, write it down. It frees up your brain, so you have it on another piece of paper and you don't have to worry about forgetting it. And take those questions to the meetings. Take them to the IEP meetings. Take them to the doctor's meetings. And make sure before you leave that meeting that you have written down the answers to those questions. Because it's very stressful going into any type of those meetings. Usually there's lots of people sitting there. You might not have ever met them before. They're using all this terminology you may not have heard, you don't deal with on a daily basis. It's a very emotional process. So anything you can do ahead of time to write down your questions, make sure those are answered before you leave, will help you feel more prepared. We've all left doctor's offices or appointments and got in the car and driven home and thought, oh gosh, I wish I would have asked that question. So, and I always encourage parents to do that.
Yeah, that's excellent advice. I really do thank you for sharing that, because it is critical that they are emotional, these meetings, and it's very difficult to remember what it is you want to ask if you don't have it written down, and you just really need to get in the habit of doing that. That's really good advice. Speaking of advice, what advice do you have for siblings in the family of children that have disabilities?
Well, I think it's very, very important for parents to understand that, yes, you have a child with a disability, but you also have other kids in your family that have other needs as well that may not have a disability. And our youngest daughter was not identified as having any sort of disability. And what we realized is when we were dealing with our oldest daughter and all of her needs, we were forgetting about the needs of our youngest child. And she was being left out of conversations, of things that we were doing, and so much energy in our family revolved around our child with special needs. And I just think it's so important to remember that your other child or children that don't have special needs are just as an important part of your family as your child with a disability. And your child with a disability may need 24/7 care. I completely understand how, you know, that is your priority. It's also important to remember, how can you build some supports and services so your other children know that they're just as valuable and contributing member of the family.
I appreciate that. And I know that's a struggle for a lot of parents. I mean, in some cases, day to day, it's just all you can do to kind of stay on top of things for your child that has the disability. And I wonder, can you cite examples of things that maybe you did in order to make sure that your daughter was in the loop, feeling included, you know, feeling as though she was getting enough attention?
Sometimes my husband, we would divide our time. And we would just have time with one child. Mm-hmm. So we would each have independent time with our kids. And sometimes we would figure out maybe grandparents or a babysitter could take care of our oldest child. So my husband and I could spend time with our youngest child and do something special. Just making sure, you know, she was involved in dance and going to her activities independent of our oldest daughter. Making sure that that time, the quality time was there. When we would sit down and have a meal together, we would make sure we were including her and what's going on in her life. Because for a while we didn't realize we weren't doing that. Mm-hmm. And started to figure out, oh gosh, you know, she has just as much, you know, of a need to be loved and be an important part of our family member as our other daughter.
So what is the one thing you see as most stressful for parents of children with disabilities? I mean, from your own personal experiences.
You so badly as a parent want to fix your child's problem.
Yeah.
And throughout the years, I've realized I have a different perspective. It's not such as of a problem. I don't perceive it as a problem other than it's a need or an issue. And I got very frustrated because I had all this knowledge of how special education works and things weren't happening. My child's IEP wasn't being implemented. Every year I would just wait for a few weeks and the teacher would say, oh, did you know that your daughter's not reading at grade level? And I would say, yep. Did you read the IEP? And it feels like you struggle so much to make small gains with your child, whatever those gains may be. It might be a reading level, or your child might be learning how to scoop his food. And when you encounter a situation where your child's needs aren't being met, it feels like you've taken 2 steps forward and then 3 steps back.
Right.
And I went through the grieving stages of death because knowing that you have a child with a disability, you go through those similar stages.
Right.
The bargaining, the depression, the anger, acceptance. And what I thought when I got to the acceptance stage, I thought I would always be there. What I realized is when there was a setback, mm-hmm. I went back to the bargaining, the anger, the
right.
depression stage. So it's a constant process. And the more you experience those things, I think the easier it gets to get acceptance. But it's kind of like, I don't want to fix my child's problem anymore. I know what her situation is, and I know what her needs are and her strengths. This is what it is. And if I spend all my energy trying to fix her, it's not something that's going to be cured.
Right.
It's just something we need to embrace and figure out what her strengths are and what she can do with to be a productive member of society.
Yeah.
So it takes looking at it from another perspective.
Right. It strikes me what you said there. It's really more about, when you come to terms with it anyway, it's really more about adapting than it is about fixing. And,
yes.
You know, looking at the individual as a whole person, you know, for limitations and strengths and everything, and then just really trying to figure out how to help her have the best possible quality of life given, you know, that whole collection of facets. And yeah, the fixing thing is a losing battle for certain.
Right.
There is definitely a level of acceptance that's needed. But it's interesting what you said, too, about the stages of grief and that you will continue to run through those, not in any particular order, and that they don't ever really end. They just keep coming back at different times as setbacks are faced and other things occur. It's common, and I we have a lot of parents who call here every day, and, you know, sometimes I feel like that's a big part of our job, is sort of just trying to walk them through sort of the emotional responses they're having to some of the things that are going on with their children, because it's really taxing. It's really
yes.
taxing.
Yes.
What advice do you have for extended family members or close friends? You know, and I mean this in terms of sort of how they approach either the child with the disabilities or the family?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question, because your family and your close friends have very good intentions.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to try and fix it too at times.
Right.
And there are times when they won't understand what you're going through because they haven't been through it themselves. Or they will try to help and they have good intentions, but it's really not helping you. It's actually adding to your frustration. And so I think it's important for the extended family and the friends to just not only, you know, what can I do to help, but just whatever, you know, if they need a break, like, hey, can I babysit one night so you and your husband can go out for a date? Or just to have an open mind. You're not walking in those parents' shoes. And to be judgmental is not helping anybody.
Right.
The parents are doing the best they know how with what they've been given. And so you as an extended family or a friend may want to feel like you're offering advice, but it may not be advice that they actually want. They just want someone to be understanding. And so And then that can cause more frustration in a family that already doesn't need it. And so everyone has their ways in thinking about how to approach a situation. You know, sometimes it's, oh, if they just disciplined them more, oh, if they took them to this doctor. Well, just know you're not walking in their shoes. And anything you can do to be open-minded and help support that family is better approach.
Thank you for that. And how, Wendy, do parents of children with special needs address their family? I mean, I've had this situation myself. It can be very uncomfortable if my daughter with ADHD starts acting up at a family gathering. It invites all sorts of criticism from various members of the family, and I feel like a broken record having to remind them that, you know, she is very impulsive, that she has issues, that we're working on them. Can you please try and be patient? Here's how we redirect her. Is there a way that parents can kind of get friends or family together to have these kinds of discussions? Is there a way that you can recommend to sort of address this so that you don't have to keep going over it and over it and over it?
That's a very good question, because family systems are so unique for each family. And some families are very close-knit and will do whatever they can. Others can be quite dysfunctional. And then you can have combinations of both in any family. And as you were talking about your example, I was thinking of the same things that I have done, is just explain the situation. And if we're at a family member's house and they're not open to the things I've said, then that's probably a choice my husband and I would make, is to not go there anymore.
Right. Yeah.
And just let them know you have your opinions about things. I mean, it's hard to sometimes be assertive because they're your family.
Right.
And there are all sorts of different family structures, and everyone has their own place. But it is hurtful as well at times when your child may not be embraced in the same way as your other child might be by some of the family members.
Yeah.
I've just learned to not have expectations about some of those situations, because the more that I expect, the more frustrated I get.
Wow. Yeah.
And the years I've just recognized this is what it is, and we're going to move forward. And so sometimes you just have to have those hard conversations with yourself or with your spouse.
Right.
So you're on the same page.
That brings me to another, I was thinking too, you know, oftentimes, husbands and wives or spouses or partners don't have the same manner of parenting or the same parenting philosophy. And I've found it to be even problematic within the scope of our own nuclear family, that it can be very difficult to come to some consensus as to how to actually parent a child with disabilities. I'm wondering if you have any insight onto that or any suggestions. I know in our case, we sought the assistance of a neuropsychologist who was also a family therapist. What a blessing that was. because he really needed to hear that this wasn't a matter of my daughter being defiant. This was a matter of her simply not being able to, you know, control her impulses. And here are some ways that you can work with that. You know, I know not all parents are going to have that resource for therapy available, but just wondering if you have any tips or insights into how to best kind of come up with a parenting strategy that works for everyone.
Well, and I certainly don't claim to be parent of the year.
Well, me either.
Parenting is very, very hard. And then you bring two people together as spouses that have different views, like you're saying. We also had a therapist that helped out tremendously. And we would go individually, and then we would go as a family. So, you know, we could address our individual issues, but then also our family issues. And I think the biggest thing for my husband and I was that we had to be open-minded, and it's not about me and my ego. And when the therapist would say, Wendy, you need to, you know, blah, 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 whatever it was, do this differently, I had to be open to that and say, you know, you're right, I will try that. Because looking at your behavior and how that's impacting that child or that family system is so important to learning, what am I doing to contribute to this situation and how can I do things differently to make help it be better? And it's so important to have open communication with your spouse because, you know, divorce rates are high anyway, but let alone they're higher for kids, for families who have kids with disabilities because it is so stressful. And my husband and I, you know, will say, hey, you know, what about this? Or have you thought about this? And that's the biggest thing is being open-minded and not being stuck in your ways.
I really appreciate that, especially from your perspective as someone who has so much experience with it. From a special education administrator's point of view, what is it you want families to really, really know? What do you want the takeaway to be?
I think the biggest thing is that special ed administrators are in this field for the most part because they truly care about kids with disabilities. This is a very tough job. There's a shortage of qualified people. Mm-hmm. It's a tough job.
Yeah.
And we all got into this because we wanted to help kids. And when we are at case conferences, we certainly do not want to argue. None of us want to go to due process hearings or court. We're all there to help the situation become better for that child. We're all under a lot of mandates from the state and federal government, especially with the funding right now.
Right.
It would be great to provide the best possible education for every single student in our district, regardless if they have disabilities or not. We are required to do more and more with less. And so I don't know any special ed director that works 9 to 5.
No.
It's a job that you're constantly looking at what else can we be doing. Mm-hmm. And we really want to work with families and having those conversations and acknowledging, you know what, you're right, the teacher shouldn't have said that. Or, you know what, we can work on this together. It really is about building those relationships. And
I'm sorry to interrupt you. I agree with you. It absolutely is about building relationships. Again, at InSource, it's one thing we see quite often is that you have a very frustrated school and then you have a very frustrated parent. And when they get into a room, they express that frustration with each other. And what they're forgetting is that you have a very frustrated child. And that's what we're all there to try and work on, is to figure out what's going to work for that child. And really, it is so much about trying to build bridges and not being, not venting anger in meetings. And it's something that, you know, both sides need to work on. And agreed, you know, the schools are under a lot of pressure, right now. They don't have a lot of money and they're being asked to do some pretty amazing things. So and there are a lot of really great success stories that come out of it. We have to get better as organizations and as individuals at sharing those stories.
Yes, because there are a lot of great things we can do that don't cost any money.
There are.
I've always looked at, you have to leave that conference with a win-win.
Mm-hmm.
Because if one of you wins, per se, and one of you loses, both people have lost. Both groups have lost.
Oh, yeah.
And so trying to come to that win-win agreement is where, you know, it takes work.
It really does. It does take work. We were talking just a little bit about success stories. Do you have any success stories that are particularly meaningful to you that you'd like to share with our listeners?
I do. You know, I have been with Wawasee Schools this is my 14th year. And what's exciting to me is that when I started out with some of our preschoolers, they're now in high school and getting ready to exit high school.
Oh, how neat.
And I've seen, you know, our kids being included into our schools and in general ed classrooms, and I've seen the impact it's made on our general ed student population. We have cadet students that are doing teaching experiences in our schools with kids with special needs. And now these students want to go on to college and become special education teachers, or they want to become school psychologists or work in the mental health field. For some of our students that started out in preschool that were nonverbal, in the last few years, they're learning to speak.
Oh, wow.
That is huge. You know, you sit at those tables when they're in preschool and the parents are overwhelmed and you're thinking, gosh, where is this child going to be in the next 10 years? And then I've seen it.
Mm-hmm.
And things that I didn't even think the child would be able to do, they're able to do. So it has taught me, you know, not to have limiting expectations mm-hmm. for these kids because there are so many things they're able to do. I think the biggest thing for me was seeing kids walk across the stage at graduation.
Mm.
And for example, we had one student with autism and he was a gifted artist and we had a display case in the high school completely dedicated to his artwork.
Wow.
And, you know, when he walked across the stage at graduation, you know, when other students who have multiple disabilities walk across the stage and people just clap and they're so proud of them, the kids with disabilities have truly enriched our student population.
That's really so nice to hear. That was one of the things that I had hoped for so many years ago when they, you know, first started moving toward the model of inclusion, mm-hmm. was that not only would inclusion give individuals with disabilities an opportunity to have friends outside of sort of that disability bubble, but that even perhaps even moreover, that individuals without disabilities would be able to learn to be friends with people who did have special needs, and that there would be more inclusion and greater understanding and more compassion and sort of an enriched sort of sense of community that would come out of that. So it makes me really happy to hear you say that you're actually seeing this happen and experiencing this. That sounds so wonderful to me.
Yeah, that's what it's all about.
It is.
Them contribute to society and helping, you know, our student population, understanding there are people that have all sorts of needs and all sorts of strengths, and that we all have things that we can be proud of and what we can do in this world.
That's great. So we're just kind of coming to the end of our discussion here. And what is it that, as we wrap things up, what do communities need to know to help individuals with disabilities?
I think the important thing is being intentional about our decision making. You know, I'm part of Kiwanis and we have Rotary and Chamber of Commerce and all of that. And really being intentional about what in our town, we have, you know, three small towns at Wawasee, mm-hmm. What can we do to help be more inclusive for people with disabilities? Are we making sure that when it's snowing that all the sidewalks are cleared off? So if someone in a wheelchair is coming by, they don't have to, you know, have barriers that way. Are we looking at the jobs in our communities and where some of our students who might have lower functioning skills can be contributing? In our libraries, in our churches. If you don't have any experience with someone with a disability, you don't know to look for those things. And so if our communities can reach out to our schools, to InSource, to First Steps to say, you know, this is what we would like to do. What suggestions do you have? Kind of bringing us all together to brainstorm, because, you know, communities are also dealing with budget cuts, with the property tax caps. And so, you know, do we have students that could help restock the library shelves at the library? Do we have students that can help stock groceries or clean the floors each night in church? Can they vacuum? You know, what are those naturally occurring things that need to be done that we could open up for other people so they're not sitting at home doing nothing and they're feeling part of their community?
Yeah, that's great advice. I mean, really, everybody sets out to make some kind of contribution in the world, and self-esteem is increased enormously by being able to give something back. And I couldn't agree with you more that it's important for us to be mindful as we create systems and jobs and organizations that moving forward, we have to be sensitive to the needs of individuals who, you know, would also like to contribute, but who may not have the level of functioning that many people do. So, you know, this has been such a great conversation for me to have with you, both as a parent and as someone who talks to parents on a daily basis. I don't know if there's somewhere where I can direct them to get more information or more support. We provide a lot of that sort of academic and information piece, but I think parents need emotional support. They need validation. I don't know if I can steer them towards you or if there's a website or if you can make some recommendations or...
I think it depends on the community where you live. And, I mean, I'm happy to be a contact if parents would like to talk with me about where else, you know, where can I go to get what I need. You know, lots of people have their church contacts or, you know, their family or friend units, but sometimes this requires a different kind of support system, someone that just understands because they've walked the same path that you have. And so I can be contacted through my email address at work, which is WHITE at WAWASE, which is WAWASE.K12.IN.US. I also have a personal email address that parents are welcome to contact me at, and that is Wendy Byak, it's WENDYBAYAK at gmail.com. I never changed it from after I got married, so that's my maiden name. It was just too hard to contact.
I know.
So I think in closing, the most important thing in this journey is to be flexible and have a sense of humor. And my husband and I kind of reference, you know, when something is going wrong, we think about, okay, we are not in Ukraine right now.
Yeah.
And right now Ukraine has, you know, civil war or unrest going on. But that's where our daughters came from. And that's a developed country. But we saw the struggles that just the average person went through just to have food on a daily basis.
Yeah.
And we are very fortunate to live in this country where we educate all kids, regardless of ability. And there is so much here that we can be very grateful for. So make sure you find something to laugh every single day, even if it's for 5 minutes, and be flexible. And don't ever give up. You can't give up. But make sure you're not stressing yourself out in the meantime and you're trying to keep things in perspective.
Excellent advice moving forward. Wendy Hite, thank you so much for joining us today on the InSource podcast. This has been really a wonderful discussion.
Thank you for this opportunity. Parents, their time is very precious and valuable, and I really appreciate the time that you've taken to spend with me and talk through some of these things.
You've been listening to the InSource podcasts. The views expressed on this podcast are those of our guests and not necessarily the views of InSource. Thanks for tuning in.